But like I said, I do have a monologue written up for you guys. So this monologue, as always, brought to you by attorney Stan McDonald. And I will tell y'all more about Stan here on the other side of this monologue. All right, so I'll be preaching to myself as much as anyone listening today. But this has been weighing on my heart recently, and it's a message I think we all need to hear regularly, one that realigns our intentions with that of God's and encourages you along the journey. But first, let me ask you, do you ever get annoyed at mundane tasks that need to be done? You know, whether it's laundry or the dishes or taking the dog out. You know, I don't have kids, so I haven't experienced this one, but changing dirty diapers or getting up at 3 a.m. when the baby's screaming their head off. You know that feeling you get when you'd rather just stay in that warm bed and just keep scrolling on TikTok or Facebook? Like, ugh, really? This sucks. You have two options in those situations. A, you can just get up and do it and get it over with. Or B, you don't do it and you let that pile of dirty dishes just sit in the sink for days. And then, you know, along the way, you move the dishes to the side so you can wash your hands and you ignore the obvious sign of your laziness just staring right in front of you. Until one day, you've had enough of the dirty dishes, so you just wash them. And you end up doing what you should have done a couple of days ago anyways. So really, the job ended up getting done no matter what, and it got even more annoying because now you had to clean up dishes that were days old. If you couldn't tell, yeah, I am the king of procrastination, and I've done that several times. Now, have you ever felt that way with God? Have you ever been in a situation where it just is so evidently clear what God is calling you to do? As if God's driving you down the road, you keep asking, you know, where are we going? What are we doing? There's no response, so you just patiently wait and stare out the window. But then you see where you're pulling into, and you go, oh, no, 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 no. No, there's no way I'm doing all that. You know, that's scary. What will people think of me? What if I fail? Or even worse, what if I get hurt? You know, there's a character in the Bible, and I'll be referencing him several times in this monologue. His name's King David. You know, ever heard of him? David was a shepherd boy who spent all of his time out in the field protecting his sheep. And David was so inconsequential in the eyes of his own father that when Samuel was told by God to go and talk to Jesse about one of his sons becoming the next king of Israel, Jesse didn't even bring him inside. And y'all know the story, but I'm going to tell it anyways. Samuel said no to all the sons that Jesse figured would be king material, and he asked, do you have another son? Jesse said, oh yeah, well, I mean, there's David. He's out there in the field. Bring him in, Samuel said. And sure enough, David was the one that God called to lead the nation of Israel. Samuel then anointed David right there as prophetic sign of what's to come. Well, later on down the road, David goes out to the battlefield where Israel is fighting the Philistines to bring food to his brothers. David sees this massive giant named Goliath openly mocking Israel and Yahweh. So what did David do? Wait. He said, boy, that Goliath sure is big. You know, y'all take this food. I'm getting the heck out of here. Nope. What he actually said was, what are y'all doing? You're just going to let him mock God like that? So this young shepherd boy, turning down wearing armor, went out to the field to confront the giant. And all that time, slinging rocks with his slingshot at lions and other predators trying to go after his sheep, this prepared him for that exact moment where he was called to step up. And he had faith that God would bring him victory. And he did. After putting a rock dead straight between Goliath's eyeballs, David slayed the giant. I'll give you one more story because I'm a massive MMA fan. One of my biggest heroes in high school as I became an MMA fan was Conor McGregor. To me, he embodied the definition of confidence, talking a big game and then backing it up. He inspired me that I too can do hard things. Well, Conor in 2016 was taking the world by storm. He went on an unbelievable win streak and capped it off by beating the undefeated pound-for-pound number one fighter in the world, Jose Aldo, in just 13 seconds. This not only made him the 145-pound champion, but it made him a superstar. Conor was then presented with the opportunity to fight for the 155-pound belt and become the first simultaneous two-weight champ in UFC history. Well, Rafael Dos Anjos, the lightweight champion, broke his foot in training for the fight. So on short notice, Nate Diaz stepped in. But Nate wanted the fight at 170 instead of 155. So now Conor is moving up two weight classes and 15 pounds heavier than the originally agreed to weight. Conor wasn't cutting weight to meet 170 like Nate was, by the way, so Nate would be fighting Conor at least 15 pounds heavier on fight night. But Conor, being the confident guy he is, said, sure. So come fight time, Conor starts teeing off on Nate Diaz in the first round. Come the second round, though, Conor starts to fade. The size difference caught up to him, and Nate started to put the pressure on him, and Nate Diaz ended up submitting Conor McGregor in round number two. This shocked the entire MMA world, the biggest upset in MMA history. After this, Connor could have said, "Yeah, I've got a belt at 145 I can go defend. I got no business fighting at 170. Or he could have said, "Hey, you know, Dos Anjos, how about that lightweight championship we were supposed to fight?" But nope, Connor said, "I will beat Nate Diaz, and I will beat him at his weight of 170. There was literally nothing for Connor to gain in doing that, other than just pride and honor. There was no belt he could win by beating Nate. He just could not live with the fact someone had beaten him, and he wanted that win back. In what was at the time the biggest fight in UFC history, Connor rematched Nate at 170. The first round looked exactly the same as last time. Connor was walking through Nate, but late in the second round and early third round, Connor started to fade once again. You know, here we go. The Irishman's bitten off more than he can chew once again. Instead of giving up, though, Connor did the exact opposite. He bit down on his mouthpiece, put his arms up, and walked Nate Diaz down, and the fight ended up being one for the ages. The greatest UFC fight ever, in my opinion. And with Nate's blood all over him, Connor defeated Nate Diaz in a majority decision. He slayed his giant and proved everyone wrong in the process. So why did I tell you these stories? Yeah, I don't know about you guys, but I can feel a major spiritual battle on our hands right now. Like, evil is really ramping it up lately against forces of good. You know, think about it. Almost a month ago, Charlie Kirk was slaughtered in cold blood for being a Christian, simply speaking his mind and engaging in debate with those who disagreed with him. The left then danced on his grave. They laughed. They mocked him. How would they react to your death if they react that way to Charlie's death? We just saw leaked messages from the Democratic candidate for Virginia AG saying that he fantasized about the Republican Virginia Speaker of the House being murdered alongside his kids. He said they were breeding little fascists and somehow, you know, something needed to be done. And he'll put on his suit, he'll smile in your face and act like he doesn't secretly want Christian conservatives killed. So like I said, there's a spiritual fight on our hands, big time. And here's the kicker. God is not calling you to stay on the sidelines. God is calling you to get engaged. That's where you get that pit in your stomach where you're like, oh, really? Like I talked about at the beginning of the monologue. You know, why can't life just be comfortable? Sorry, but that's not what we were made for. We weren't made for comfort. We were made and called to bring the gospel to the darkest places. You think the apostles wanted to die such gruesome deaths? You think Peter really wanted to get crucified upside down? And if you're saying to yourself, who am I to do anything special? Well, let me tell you something. God doesn't call the equipped, he equips the called. Let me say it again. God doesn't call the equipped, he equips the called. I bring David back into the picture. David was a shepherd boy. His own father didn't even see him worthy enough of being king. David committed adultery when he was king and had the husband of Bathsheba killed so he could be with her. But yet, God called David a man after God's own heart. Peter, the one who Jesus proclaimed was the rock of which he would build his church, denied Jesus three times to his face. Moses was a murderer. Paul persecuted Christians. You know, I can go on and on. Nobody is worthy. We are all sinful. But we as Christians are also all called. We're all called in different ways, but it's on us to answer the bell. This is antithetical to the modern Christian belief that we just need to be tolerant. We need to let everyone just exercise their own truth. Oh, golly gee, I don't want to get involved in politics because that's divisive. I love it when pastors say, we're not going to tell you how to vote. Well, our enemies are surely engaged. They're voting. The ones who fantasize about Christian conservatives dying are literally on the ballot and are still supported by other Democrats after the fact. The ones who celebrated Charlie Kirk's death are surely voting. The ones who want to mutilate your kids, who want to put porn in their school libraries, who mock Christianity and want to turn America into Sodom and Gomorrah, they're engaged. So we need to get engaged also, because one ideology is going to win. You know, God doesn't call us to sit on the side, hold our hands, and wait for a rapture. Oh, it's going to get worse before it gets any better, so what's the point? So you're telling me the plan is just to sit back and let these degenerate losers win? Seriously? That's nonsense. We need to fight back. And when I say that, the left says, look, a violent Christian nationalist. Nope. We won't fight like they do. We won't shoot them like they shoot us. We won't fantasize about their deaths like they do ours. I bring David back into the picture one last time. When David was rising in popularity amongst the Israelites before he was king himself, and Saul was still reigning as king of Israel, King Saul got a little jealous. He ordered David to be killed and led the charge to find David and murder him. While on the run, David found Saul in a cave relieving himself while he was actively looking for David. Any logical person would say, well, this was David's opportunity to take Saul out. Nobody was looking. Nobody would blame David for killing Saul right there on the spot. and then, you know, he would assume the throne as king of Israel. But David didn't do that. David spared Saul, cut a piece of his robe to let him know that he had the opportunity to kill him, but chose not to. David honored that King Saul was anointed by God as king and would not kill him. I think this can speak to us today. There are those who want us dead simply because we speak the truth and we have the Holy Spirit in us. Just like how Saul wanted David killed. Our response is not violence. It's to double down on speaking the truth, professing the gospel, and spreading love to those who hate us. But that requires you to get engaged. You know your talents that God gave you deep down, and it's time to start putting it to use for good. You know, maybe God called you to run for office. Maybe God called you to just go to your city council and make your cause heard in front of everyone. You know, everyone can do something. But do not be intimidated or scared because the left is getting violent and have that cause you to stay on the sidelines. Because remember, God is on our side. So it's time for us to bite down on our mouthpiece, put your hands up, and get engaged. Because remember, in the end, we win. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way.